Well, good afternoon. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the story behind the story, the news behind the news, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion. That's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and if you have any question or comment, we invite your calls, but only after the half hour. Our telephone number at that point will be 464-8295. That's 464-TAX-L, for tax less, of course, or 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But right now, we have on the line with us Dr. Brzezinski. Dr. Brzezinski, thank you so very much for being with us this afternoon.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.
Now, Dr. Brzezinski has both a medical degree, a Ph.D. He has a clinic in Texas where he has been working for many years under FDA, Federal Drug Administration, permission to do experimental work with treatment for cancer. And, of course, he's been targeted recently by our government, our government, which is there to protect us. And as the prosecutor said in an article I read, even good people do bad things, referring to Dr. Brzezinski and the fact that he had committed a terrible crime. Some of his medication had gone across state boundaries. And Dr. Brzezinski, would you like to sort of comment a little bit about yourself, what you're doing, and really how the government has targeted you for destruction because, in my estimation, you have a cancer treatment that really works?
Well, I would say that even good government is doing bad things, and that's a good example that they are doing bad things in our case and in case of our patients. Well, it happened that I am a discoverer of chemicals which exist in our body which work as molecular micro-switches. They can turn off the signals which are forcing malignant cells to multiply. You turn off the electricity in cancer cell, and the cancer cell will stop multiplying and it will die. We don't need to destroy them because they will die on their own. So this is a treatment which everybody was looking for many years. Of course, it's not perfect yet. It works for some cancers. It doesn't work for the others. But obviously, we are learning how to treat many different cancers, and on the way, we are helping to save lives of people who don't have any chance to have good results with any other treatment.
Now, you found that this is very successful with certain types of brain cancer. Which types of brain cancer and which other cancers is this treatment beneficial for?
We decided to use this treatment first in the type of cancer which is always fatal, okay, which everybody dies from, and I think highly malignant brain tumors fit this definition. We know very well that regardless if we are dealing with the chairman of the board of a great oil company or advisor to the president, they are dying from malignant brain tumors. That's why I decided to treat such tough cancer in the first place. Currently, we are conducting 23 different clinical trials only in the treatment of malignant brain tumors. So in each of these trials, we are supposed to have 40 patients who are diagnosed with different type of malignant brain tumor. Of course, it's not the end of it because we have altogether 72 clinical trials approved by FDA in which we are treating different types of cancer. But approximately a third of the clinical trials which we are using is for the treatment of different types of malignant brain tumors. And we have good results in such tough malignant tumors to treat, like, for instance, anaplastic astrocytoma, mixed glioma, oligodendroglioma, medulloblastoma, rhabdoid tumor of the brain, just to mention some of them. I don't want to tire you with giving you the names of medical, technical cancers, but in most of these tumors where nothing can be done, we are able to save human lives. Unfortunately, these patients are usually coming to us after they tried everything. They are very advanced, and we cannot help everybody, but still, we are able to save a number of them. And these malignant brain tumors, you already finished one of the clinical trials which has been approved by FDA, and only 20% of patients in this particular clinical trial did not have any good response. The rest have some type of responses. In many of them, the tumor completely disappeared or decreased during the treatment. We have patients who are free from highly malignant tumors for many years, over 5 years, and doing well. So this is something which could greatly benefit people if it's allowed to be developed. And here we found obstacle. And the obstacle is the agency which normally should do everything possible to help us.
Well, now, why have they targeted you? I mean, this ostensibly because some of the medication went across interstate boundaries, borders, but you get patients from all over America, and it seems that they're doing everything they can and putting every obstacle in the way to keep you from being able to save human lives.
That's what they did over the last 14 years, wasting millions and millions of taxpayers' money. So that's insanity, which is fueled by some of FDA lawyers. And the chief architect of this whole thing, the chief villain, is Mr. Robert Spiller, who is occupying the position of associate counsel at FDA. He is sitting somewhere in the FDA office, and he is wasting millions of dollars of taxpayers' money running vendetta against us, simply because I refuse to die, simply because in 1983, when I was attacked first time by FDA, I decided to defend myself. And I defended myself, I stayed alive, and I was able to really do everything what the FDA wanted from us. I was able to be approved by FDA as principal investigator, and I am doing everything according to the law. So what FDA did after that? FDA was unhappy with the judge's decision who allow us to continue to treat our patients. And then they embarked on grand jury investigations. Altogether, I recall 6 grand jury investigations to put me out of business, practically to put me to jail. Normally, it is sufficient to have 1 grand jury investigation to indict somebody. In my case, it took them about 6 grand jury investigations. And what they were trying to prove? They were trying to prove that I was shipping our medicine to the patients who were outside the state of Texas. They couldn't prove it because that's, according to FDA, against the law, and that's what I decided that we are not going to do. The patients were coming to us from all over the country. And after a while, after, for instance, 2 weeks, after a month, when they were getting better, they were returning home, and they were taking medicine with them. So that's what FDA felt it was criminal act, that the patients were taking medicine with them to their home state. And they were not accusing patients. They were accusing me of criminal act of allowing patients to leave Texas. Can you think about more insane idea? How can I keep American people here in the state of Texas forever, okay? It's impossible. And FDA knows that it's impossible. And yet, they were able to somehow convince the people in the grand jury that I committed criminal act because the patients were taking medicine out of state. Everybody knows that law allows the patients to go to Mexico. They can buy whatever medicine they want to treat cancer. They can bring this back to their home state, and that's fine. But when they came to us to take medicine which already was approved for clinical trial, FDA claimed that this was criminal act. So there's something basically wrong.
Well, of course, did you ever stop and think that maybe they don't want you saving human lives?
They don't, apparently, because they couldn't care less about saving human lives. And when I was indicted about a year and a half, the first attempt from lawyers representing FDA was to stop treatment for our patients. They did not hesitate to stop treatment knowing that the treatment is saving lives of these patients. They wanted about 300 people to die simply to boost FDA ego, okay? So that's, in my opinion, criminal act. And this should be exposed. And never in American history should any agency be allowed to play with human life like that.
I certainly agree with you. Now, we have on the line Mr. Dean Mosier, and I'm going to ask if my call screener would mind running outside and telling that fellow with the blower to stop blowing, because I'm afraid it's going to come through on the radio program. Mr. Mosier, are you there?
I am indeed.
Where do you fit into this?
Well, I'm the clinical trials director, basically the regulatory affairs person who's overseeing all of the clinical trials that we're conducting with full FDA approval. And, that's really one of the great ironies of this whole thing is that And the jury wasn't allowed to hear this during the trial that took place in January and February, and they were flabbergasted when it was over and they found out. But
in other words, what they did was the court system was set up so you couldn't really defend yourself effectively.
No, we couldn't. It was very selective, and the fact is that, you know, the whole trial was a moot point, because by the time we got to trial, already for a year, all of the patients that we see had been in FDA clinical trials or on FDA-approved compassionate exceptions, and we were treating them, and including out-of-state patients, and even shipping the medicine out-of-state with full FDA knowledge and approval. And no patients were being treated without FDA approval. So you know, the whole point of the trial was really moot. So Dr. Brzezinski was being tried for doing something several years ago that he was doing legally every day during the trial.
And so basically they had targeted him. What do you think that their real objective was?
Well, I think different parts have different objectives. I think that, Dr. Brzezinski mentioned Robert Spiller, and I think it's important to realize that, I guess everybody knows that has had experience with an obsessive bureaucrat who just loses track of what country he's in and who he's supposed to be serving and what his job is. And I know of no more startling example than Robert Spiller. What happened is this. In 1983, Robert Spiller, who was the associate chief counsel of the FDA, went to court to try to shut down Dr. Brzezinski, and he failed. The judge ruled that Dr. Brzezinski cannot ship the medicine out of state, but the FDA, as a federal agency, has no jurisdiction over what he does within the state of Texas. Well, Robert Spiller was furious and actually wrote almost a threatening memo to the judge, or motion, and said that if she does not grant the relief sought, the FDA will have to resort to other, quote, less efficient methods, such as searches and seizures and criminal prosecutions. And that's what they've done. There was a very interesting article, an interview with Peter Barton Hutt, who was a former chief counsel of the FDA, virtually ran the agency in the late 70s, and he was quoted as saying, if you beat the FDA in court, you have an angry FDA that is willing to slit your throat.
Supposedly, our government is there to serve us, not to control us, not to threaten us, not to do everything they can to go around the law so that their will becomes the law of the land.
Well, that's the theory, but, unfortunately, sometimes power corrupts, and it certainly did in this case.
Well, this is the sort of thing you might expect in communist Russia or Nazi Germany, but certainly not in America.
Or communist Poland, from whence Dr. Brzezinski came, which
right.
is another irony.
All right, fine. Well, right now, of course, we're going to have to take our first break, and at this point, we want to mention to our listeners that we are listener-supported, and if you agree with our message and would like to help us so that we can get this sort of message out across America and begin to put things into their proper perspective, we'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters, we'll send you the four best tapes of the month and encourage you to copy those tapes and get them out far and wide, because the things that are going on in America are really so totally unbelievable. Our address, of course, is Post Office Box 13 in Santa Cruz, 95063. Our telephone number, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war. Our whole system of government, our system of culture, our freedoms are under attack today. And, of course, if you'd like to join the radio, if you'd like to join and help us, one thing you can do is change your long-distance telephone carrier. All you do is pick up your telephone right now and call 1-800-545-9533. Or it's easy to remember. It's 1-800-KICK, K-I-K-W-L-E-E. That's 1-800-KICK, K-I-K-W-L-E-E. W-L-E-E, and just say you want to change your long-distance carrier from whatever you have to Lifeline, and, of course, then 10% of whatever your bill is will come back to us. We've been very pleased. We have saved a lot of money on our own private and personal telephone bills just simply by switching to Lifeline. We hope that you will as well. That's 1-800-KICK, K-I-K-W-L-E-E. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and on the line with us is Dr. Brzezinski, who is MD, PhD. He came from Poland. He's made some of the most startling discoveries as far as cancer is concerned, and, of course, the government is doing everything they can to prevent him from saving human lives. Along with him is Dean Mosier, who's in charge of their clinical investigative studies. And, of course, what happened at the last trial? I understood that it was a locked jury, that basically they had a mistrial on that. What happened?
Well, what happened is the judge actually threw out all of the most serious charges, which were the fraud charges, and the jury deadlocked on the rest of the charges. We had a hung jury split down the middle 6-6.
And, of course, that means then that they can come back again if they want to.
They rarely do. Occasionally in a murder case in which they think they have compelling evidence, they'll come back. But in this case, apparently, they are going to retry.
And is this the federal government that's doing this, of course?
Yes, it is.
And, of course, then they were very clever so that the jury really didn't know what the issues were as far as what was really going on?
Well, right. They didn't let the jury know, for one thing, as I mentioned, that we are treating all patients now with full FDA knowledge and approval. And the other thing, and probably the most important thing that the government managed to have suppressed, is the efficacy of the drug. You would expect, normally in a trial of this sort, if the government thought it had any evidence that the drug didn't work, they would, of course, want to bring that in. But, of course, all the evidence points to the fact that the drug is effective. And so the government, the FDA, fought like a caged animal to keep that evidence out of court and succeeded. So we were unable to put on any witnesses or any patients. We put on patients, but they were unable to speak about the efficacy of the drug.
And, of course, the question is, why is the government trying to destroy a drug that will save people's lives from cancer? And, of course, I have my own views on that. Basically, are there any other cancers besides brain cancers that you're treating?
Dr. Brzezinski?
No, we have very exciting results in the treatment of non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, especially the type of lymphoma which seldom responds well to chemotherapy. I'm talking about low-grade lymphoma. We already had patients who were completely cured from this type of lymphoma, including patients who previously failed on bone marrow transplantation. We have a number of different clinical trials in this category. If I remember well, we must have at least about 5 to 7 clinical trials in the area of lymphoma. Then the other exciting possibility is the treatment of cancer of a gastrointestinal system. For instance, liver cancer, cancer of the pancreas, colon cancer, cancer of the esophagus. In this area, we already have some successes, but we need to spend more time and accrue more patients to clinical trials to find out statistically how it works.
Well, now, cancer of the pancreas, in medical school I learned that cancer of the pancreas was essentially a death warrant. I mean, there was nothing you could do. We did the Whipple operation, which was simply delayed the obvious or the inevitable. Have you been able actually to ameliorate in any way cancer of the pancreas?
Yes, we are able to accomplish this, but of course, we still have to perfect our treatment for this type of cancer. It's more difficult for us to treat pancreatic cancer than malignant brain tumors, but we have patients who are long-term survivors who are now over 5 years free from pancreatic cancer since we treated them. Of course, only some patients. A number of patients did not respond, and as I mentioned, we still need to perfect this treatment. But obviously, this is just the beginning of the area, which is very exciting. And once we have government off our back and we have cooperation with researchers all over the world, then I believe we can conquer many cancers. This is just the beginning, and obviously we need a lot of support, but not harassment of the type which we experienced in the last 14 years.
Well, now, basically, you have presented this to medical meetings all over America. How many peer review papers have you published? Your material, your dossier, curriculum vitae, really very, very impressive. How many papers have you published on this?
We have over 100 papers, and what is even more important now, the number of papers published by researchers who are not associated with us, the researchers from the National Cancer Institute, various medical colleges, and the researchers from foreign medical schools, including Japanese, Israeli, European medical schools. These numbers are even higher now than the number of papers which we publish. So it looks like we are approaching about 200 publications done by researchers who are completely independent from us, which is even more important. And this is going much faster now than ever before.
And are they getting the same good results that you are?
They do. Of course, many of them are involved in basic research to find out how various antineoplastins, this is the name of our medicines, work. Some of them are involved in clinical trials, such as researchers in Japan. And altogether, we can see great future for this type of treatment.
Now, tell us a little bit about what an antineoplastin is. What sort of a chemical or enzyme or a product is it?
This is a group of chemicals, and they have in this group, there are various types of molecules. We have peptides, which are small proteins. We have amino acid derivatives, which is a type of chemicals even smaller in molecular size than peptides. And then we have certain organic acids. So these are three groups of chemicals which are comprising antineoplastins. We believe that the number of antineoplastins will be growing. Right now we are talking about 10 different antineoplastins, but we know that there are more than that. So when the time goes by, I think we probably end up with as large a group of antineoplastins as we are dealing with antibiotics. And they work as different microswitches, those which we isolated so far, which we identify chemical structure. They are able to regulate very important oncogenes. This is a RAS oncogene family. This family of oncogenes is responsible for approximately 40% of all cancers. And what these antineoplastins can do, they can turn off electrical signal which is generated by these oncogenes. And this electrical signal is necessary to force malignant cells to multiply all the time and produce millions and millions of cancer cells. When we turn off electrical signal, multiplication will stop. But this is not the end of it. There are some antineoplastins which regulate tumor suppressor genes. Tumor suppressor genes is a different family of genes which should eliminate abnormal cells, which should force malignant cells to die through what is called programmed cell death. This is a suicide program which exists in every cell and which is blocked in cancer cells. If we activate tumor suppressor genes, then they will, in addition to that, activate a suicide program in cancer cells. And then the cancer cells will die. But they will die in peace without causing any turbulence in the body. And again, in this area, we are regulating perhaps the most important tumor suppressor gene, which is called P53 gene. This gene is responsible for approximately 50% of all cancers. So altogether, we can handle numerous types of cancer, but in each category, we have always a certain percentage of patients who will respond to the treatment and some patients who don't respond, because if we take under consideration even malignant brain tumors, then only about 70% of these patients have abnormality of P53 gene. The rest of them have different genes involved, and we have to find some other antineoplastins which will be helpful to them.
And, of course, you know, as a surgeon, I know a little bit about the fatality, this horrible brain cancer, which, you know, once it becomes inoperable, the outlook is pretty grim. We're going to have to take our second break for the afternoon, and at this point we'd like to suggest to our listeners that if you really want to understand what indeed is happening in our society, you really need to get some of the various books that we have available, and of course we strongly recommend the book Foundations, Their Power and Influence, which certainly gives the background of how the great tax-exempt foundations have been working with a specific agenda in America for almost 100 years. The book is written by Rennie Wormser, who is the counsel for the Reese Committee, which was commissioned by the 83rd Congress to find out if the great tax-exempt foundations had an unknown or covert agenda. Foundations, Their Power and Influence was a book that I read some years ago and changed my life and promoted me and propelled me into this crusade we've been involved in for many years, trying to awaken the American people to the fact that we have real problems in America, and we have people who have a loyalty to a different agenda than the average citizen who wants to be free. Foundations, their power and influence is the story of the Reese Committee. It's been suppressed for many years, now available simply by calling 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America is at war today. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon, Dr. Brzezinski, and Dean Mosier, who is the Director of Clinical Research for Dr. Brzezinski and his clinic. Whereabouts actually is your clinic there in Texas?
Our clinic is in Houston, and in addition to clinic, we also have a manufacturing facility, which was inspected many times and approved by the FDA. And we have also a research institute. A research institute and manufacturing facility is in Stafford, Texas, which is near Houston.